Good morning. Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We will open the meeting with the reading of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a true realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. This declaration is a declaration of principles. Principles which give guidance to theosophical work, study, and practice. The United Lodge of Theosophists has been in operation for more than 100 years, and it has been sustained by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. It is without officers, bylaws, or constitution, and it is important that each associate decide for himself how he will serve the cause of theosophy, which is the cause of humanity. This idea is practiced throughout the theosophical communities in the world, for each lodge operates autonomous of every other lodge, but are nevertheless united by aim, purpose, and teaching. And it has been taught that to follow the principles that are outlined in the Declaration of United Lodge of Theosophists can lead to one of the most important aspects of the philosophy, and that is self-reliance. Now, here in Philadelphia, our program consists of two weekly meetings. Sunday mornings beginning at 11 o'clock and lasting until 12 noon, and on Wednesday evenings from 7:45 until 9 o'clock. Our Wednesday evening meetings are using as the text The Ocean of Theosophy by William Hugh Judge. And for the last several weeks, the class has been engaged in a study of cycles. And we are told that cycles are the most important aspect of the theosophical system. Also, on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, a talk, a forum, or panel is presented. And these are based on the theme for the month of April, More on the Hidden Side of Nature. And the talk for today is entitled, The Hidden Record of Man and Nature. And next Sunday morning, there will be a forum on the subject of spiritualism, old and new. Now, following all the presentations on Sunday mornings, it's always time for question discussions. The Lodge also maintains a reference library, which is open each Wednesday from 5:30 until 7:30. This Lodge carries a straight line of theosophical literature, comprising the original writings of the founders of the theosophical movement. There are other texts of importance available, and if one is interested, he may contact the student librarian. Also on Wednesday evenings, you will find a reference located in the library or behind the usher's chair. Now, all activities of this lodge are free. The lodge continues to be sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. We neglected to say that anyone wishing to purchase theosophical literature may accomplish this during library hours or before or after the regular meetings. The reading for today has been selected from The Friendly Philosopher by Robert Crosby. You may, if you will, set apart a certain half hour just before retiring and after arising as soon as possible. I think I started at the wrong place.
Page 13.
Page 13, well, this is what I have, is it not? Okay, pardon me. You speak of a surer sense of truth than any manner of reasoning. This is the action of buddhi, direct cognition, the goal to which all right philosophy and right life leads. In our sincere efforts, we are at times may have flashes of that seed of consciousness. The great result would be to have the continuous cooperation of manas and buddhi, higher mind and spiritual knowledge, to work as the God-man, perfect in all parts, instead of present sectional operations which obtain. You may remember that in the Voice of the Silence, there are two doctrines, the doctrine of the I and the doctrine of the brain consciousness, composed largely of external expressions or impressions. The doctrine of the heart is of the spiritual consciousness of the ego, not perceived by the brain consciousness until right thought and right action, which sooner or later follows it, attune certain centers in the brain in accord with the spiritual vibration. It might be well to read the Voice of the Silence and meditate on its sayings. You have had much of the intellectual side. There should be as much of the devotional. For what is desirable is the awakening of the spiritual consciousness, the tuition, buddhi, and this cannot be done unless the thoughts are turned that way with power and purpose. Do not try to open up conscious communication with beings on other planes. It is not the time, and danger lies that way. Because of the power of creating one's own images, and because of the power and disposition of the dark forces to simulate beings of light and render futile your efforts to reach the goal. When the materials are ready, the architect will appear. But seek him not. Seek only to be ready. Do the best you can from day to day, fearing nothing, doubting nothing, putting your whole trust in the great law, and all will be well. With the right attitude, and knowledge will come. The subject of the talk for this morning is the hidden record of man and nature.
So this month, then, we are continuing our study on the hidden side of nature. But as this class title reads, we are adding another component, and that is the hidden side of man and nature. And we'll be looking at the hidden side of both of them together. And to start off, we want to read a definition of the word record. It is an act of recording, the state of being recorded, the account in writing or the like, preserving the memory or knowledge of facts or events. Information or knowledge preserved in writing or the like. And fifth, a report, list or aggregate of actions or achievements. And this definition of record, when we get to a certain part in the discussion, we'll see how pretty much every one of these points in the definition will be appropriate. We will look at what, if anything, is recorded in man and nature? And then if something is recorded, what is that and where is it recorded? And what kind of practical application does this play in a theosophical student's life? In other words, why do we need to know this? So when we look at that idea of hidden, mainly it's that we can't see anything that's hidden, because that is the purpose of something being hidden, is so that we can't see it. And it was interesting because we had a teacher when we were in college, an ethics instructor, and she used to tell us almost in every class, she said, this is nothing. She said, she would go like this, this is stuff. That's all this is stuff. But what does that mean, though? If this is all stuff, then, I'm looking at this body. This is real. I can touch it. So why is it only looked at as being nothing but stuff? But the general public looks at the idea of the human body as being the real thing. So, we watch TV and there's makeup and there's clothes and things to make you thin. And medicine is focused on, at all costs, pretty much, keeping people alive longer. But why do we need to escape death? Death is just a part of life. The philosophy talks about the real man, that eternal ego, is what goes from life to life. And when it goes on another plane, it doesn't, at death, it doesn't even realize that the physical body is gone. It's just going on its continued evolution. It's just a natural part of living. So theosophy puts forth then the idea of man and nature being dual. And in dual, we mean that there's a transient or temporary part of our nature, that being the lower four principles of a body, the linga sarera or the astral body. We're looking at the life force, and then we're looking at the passions and desires, or the kama principle. But then we have, of course, that higher nature, the higher triad, that includes mind or manas, and then we have buddhi, which is the intuition as well as the storehouse of all experiences, and atma or spirit. And the difference between man and the lower kingdoms being animal, plant, and mineral, is that their mind principle has not been lit up yet. Yet it is there in germ form. And although we have, as humans, with our mind principle being lit up, we have as mind beings the idea of choice. We can make decisions. We can think from beginning to end, whereas the lower kingdoms only act out of instinct, and that instinct is dependent upon what class of lower kingdom they are. So when we look at this whole idea of hidden versus real, then we come to know that what is actually real is hidden, and what is visible is not real. It's an illusion. And so these hidden principles in our ideas for today, we can look at the three higher triad as being hidden records as well. But there are so many different ideas on this topic of hidden record that we're hoping that more will come out in the discussion after the talk, because there's just too much information out there to cover in just a short lecture. So we're going to concentrate mainly on two ideas of the hidden record, what actually records. And we're going to be looking at the astral light, and we're going to be looking at memory. So then, some of those hidden records, as we said, we have those higher principles. And we need to make note, too, that Atma, being spirit, is not affected by any of these actions, as Atma is a ray of that deific essence. And buddhi, along with this higher mind, because manas is divided, mind is divided. It's not divided. It's one principle that can be used in two different ways. It can be used to go towards buddhi, towards that higher spiritual aspect, or it can be used going towards that desire principle. So that is a lot of the issue that we, at this time of evolution, we have to look at, is which direction are we going to, which direction we're going to be going in. Are we going to be going towards spirit, or are we going to go towards the passions and desires? So the spiritual ego, and we're talking about buddhi, is the storage of all knowledge, experience, and feelings. But when that lower mind is dominant, these earthly events are then part of the personal man, not the spiritual one. So we're going to start off by looking at the astral light. And the astral light is made from starry matter and is considered to be, and this is a quote, the register of nature. It contains, retains, and reflects pictures of each and everything that happened to anyone, and also every thought. It permeates the globe, and it is said that the astral light actually is around the same distance away from the Earth as the atmosphere is, and the atmosphere around it, unquote. But it, although it is not really considered to be a principle of man and nature, it does interact with all beings and everything it interacts with. And it contains all these particles, matter, visible or not, and it contains all forms. Once anything initiates a vibration, whether it be sound, whether it be light, it is then in that astral. It also registers mistakes in the past. It also registers the present, and it also registers what is to come. And there's a quote we like to say that this is what we mean, that there is nothing new under the sun. And it also explains why in, like with the Nobel Prizes, so many scientists are working on the same thing at the same time, countries apart, and not knowing that the other is doing the same thing. So in other words, then, when we think wrongly or we think positively, these thoughts will be registered in the astral light. The thoughts have power, and thoughts have vibration. So we can think, so then we know then how important it is that when we think, we try to think positively so that this astral can be populated with positive ideas. Because all these things can affect us on an occult level. And as the astral light affects all of nature, and man is, we think it's Mr. Judge in the ocean, he talks about man as being a dynamo of energy. So whatever we're putting out into the astral, the ocean of theosophy even talks about how our thoughts, if they congregate in one area enough, that it can also be the causes for natural catastrophes. So we can see then how the astral is just a huge, huge collection of everything that has been thought, has been done, and in the present and also in the future. So we're going to go on to memory then. Memory is also a record of the past actions, thoughts, experiences of everything that we have done, and whether it's fleeting or not, because it always is registered. And the physical brain then is the instrument that will allow the form, whether it be a human or an animal form, animal or man, to remember these actions. And it was interesting this morning as we were getting ready to come that there was a TV show on. They were talking about plants. And it was even mentioned how they have even been able to realize that plants have memory. And they gave an example, we think it was the Venus flytrap, and how it actually takes two brushings of these little hairs, and they're looking at the idea of they can hit the one, and then it remembers when it hits the second one, the insect, and that's what stimulates the capsule to close. So it's it's just very interesting. We're hearing more and more about tests on plants that they are more complicated, as if they're not complicated enough. But in a hidden way, they are more complicated than we ever realized. So depending on karma, then, specifically with animals and man, then, the condition of the brain will determine the brain's ability to remember. It is the brain that's the intermediary between buddhi, which holds the higher experiences and past experiences, whereas the lower ideas and experiences come from the astral. So the condition of the brain then will determine the ability of that person to access any of these two places to pull the ideas forward. And there's three types of memory. One is remembrance. And that's when one just, I remember this, but I don't know the details. You know, especially when we're little. And the second one is recollection. And that's when we're able to collect back from one point all the points connected with it. So if we remember during the summer when we were little and we were swimming and Johnny pushed me in and then my daddy came and picked me up. And so it's like you remember one thing and you can pick up all the little details about it. But then the third type, reminiscence, is not dependent on the brain, although it is the brain that translates it so we can experience it. And what reminiscence is that these are memories that springs from the soul itself. It is considered to be direct perception of what is. And we all know, if we've ever had a cat or a dog, you know, they do act on instinct, we know that. But if they've been outside and they get caught like in barbed wire or whatever, they're going to remember not to go there again. So we know that and now we hear about the plants, so we know that there's the idea of memory in the lower kingdoms as well. So why does the student then need to know these ideas regarding the hidden side of man and nature? And we've discussed here that we can affect the world by, if there's a small group of people that are continually populating the astral with good thoughts, good actions, and good deeds, then it can affect, you know, everybody, because hopefully there would be a sense of goodwill. We need to know that we are all one. We are all aspects of that deific essence. The whole idea of brotherhood, and what hurts one, depending upon how we populate the astral, will hurt others. So think good thoughts, and we can save the world. So how can we access the higher memory and clean up the astral? Well, it was mentioned today in the reading. And mainly, and sometimes we do have these flashes. We're not saying that these ideas from buddhi are not ever able to get through, because depending upon what we're doing, if we're not focused on material things, many times our brain can become porous so that these higher flashes can come through. And Mr. Crosby in Spirit in the Body talks about how using the voice of the silence, specifically the idea of the doctrine of the eye and the doctrine of the heart. Although we need the doctrine of the eye, we need to have knowledge. We need to have understanding. But we also need to have the heart. We need to have the emotional aspect as well, because this is what is going to help us obtain that idea of universal brotherhood. And then, of course, there's the voice of the silence. There's so many good meditative ideas in that, because we have to develop the devotional side as well as the intellectual side. And we found a really interesting one page article by HPB, and it's just called A Note on Memory. Nothing that takes place, no manifestation, however rapid or weak, can ever be lost from the skandhic record of man's life. Skandhas are like the characteristics. Not the smallest sensation, the most trifling action, impulse, thought, impression, or deed can fade or go out from or in the universe. We may think it unregistered by our memory, unperceived by our consciousness, yet it will still be recorded on the tablets of the astral light. Personal memory is a fiction of the physiologist, personal memory being that lower memory with lower mind and the desire principle. There are cells in our brain that receive and convey sensations and impressions, but this once done, their mission is accomplished. These cells of the supposed organ of memory are the receivers and conveyors of all the pictures and impressions of the past, not their retainers. So if anybody, I mean, we can certainly discuss memory and the astral light, but if anybody has any other ideas in regards to some of the other tablets that these hidden ideas are written on, we can do that too. So we'll take any questions. Yes?
If all these ideas are recorded for man in some way, why are they kept as glyphs or some kind of symbol that doesn't speak directly to what it is, but it arouses within us an idea of what it is? For instance, the history of man, his true evolution. Mm-hmm. We find it, I think it says in the voice of the silence, it's the symbols and glyphs throughout all these ancient writings. Why is it not spoken? Why is it always represented as a symbol of something from the past?
Well, we understand that that the symbols and the glyphs speak to our higher nature, and often HPB has said that in many respects we are not ready to receive all of this hidden knowledge. So we think that the glyphs are and the symbols are specifically geared towards those that are ready to know. If anybody wants to add to that in the back.
Well, it's also where your focus is. If our focus is on what we think we believe, what we think we know, then we're not going to pay attention, even if the most dramatic spiritual thing happened right in front of us. It's our framework that matters. So we find it in our own ancient memory. That's what glyphs and symbols are. It's our experience in the past. So perhaps we touch it that way
and ignore as much as we can. We know a teenager who touched theosophy and said, oh, it's obvious to me it's true, but it would interfere with everything I want to do. And they never looked again. We think we're much like that.
And also the dreams we know come many times in glyphs and symbols that are specific to the person, that nobody can really tell you what that is, that it's something the person has to figure out. Did you have something on that?
To add to that comment, whether we're speaking of the record in Bodhi or in the astral, it's recorded there in a symbol. That's the language of that memory. So a physical symbol sort of appeals to it, awakens it as a memory. And we're thinking of, you mentioned associative memory. Well, very often we're going through the day, we hear a certain song or a certain smell, a certain sound, and it's the vibration of that experience that awakens the previous memory, not necessarily the actual content, but it sort of arouses the previous memory. So in that way, symbols arouse our memories.
And it's interesting, we've all experienced what specifically music that takes us to say, oh, I remember, you know, we were dating then, or, you know, oh, that takes me back to my childhood. So we can, that's just a couple examples of that. Thank you. Yes?
There's another good reason why we have glyphs and symbols, and that is it's a universal language. In different languages, they can be explained differently, and even in the same language, different people will use different words to explain them, but they impress themselves on the psyche, on the mind, on the person, and they are, if we are ready, they will be received, as has been mentioned.
Yeah. And in the back, did you have something?
Sure. What we find interesting about symbols is our understanding that interpretations of symbols by two different people can be very different.
Mm-hmm.
And often we'll think of a symbol, well, a cross or a swastika, but actually a spoken word is also a symbol. And so when someone listens to a lecture, five different people, although everybody hears the same thing and everybody knows the theme of it, five different people can have five different interpretations, use the same lecture if they apply it in their life, and in five different ways. So on the external side of nature, it's what everybody hears. But if they use it in their own way to affect the people around them, then really what matters is the hidden side of it that they interpreted and expressed.
And we know with religions that there's many commonalities that are in symbolic form that are the same too. Yes.
Well, relating the astral to the symbols, the astral is in a sense it's the repository of a lot of negativity. And if we can clean that up, won't we be able to interpret the symbols better? If we clean up our lower nature and flush out some of the dregs, I mean, it's all there in the astral for the whole world. And the most baffling thing is, it's the future is there as well. But that sort of sounds like fatalism. But we're not so sure. It sounds like our current actions, well, we're always making karma, so I guess the reason it's there is because it's the result of our current actions. So we need to suffer or enjoy the effects in the future.
Well, in regards to cleaning up in the astral, especially the astral that's around us, and to understand those symbols, what we read from the reference at the end to make our minds more porous to the dictates of the soul is one way that we can clean things up so that we can interpret those symbols that the higher self is probably trying to get down through us. And there was another point we thought that you had made.
About the future?
Oh, we need to understand too that the astral, everything's sevened in nature and in man. So the astral light as well has a sevening. And the part that is closest to Earth, the bottom level of the astral, is where all the dregs are. So, and it's the part closest to us. So we need to continually try and put out, make it as consistent as possible with the meditation, with the reading of the devotional books, you know, going over our day and all the things that, the good things that we're told to do to help clean up our nature and the astral. Way in the back.
As to the future in the astral light, what we're really talking about are the seeds that have already been planted. And any of us that have ever planted seeds knows that not all of them are going to survive. So if there are future terrible things coming to us as individuals, as cities, as nations, we can, through the very methods you're talking about, change that, alter that. They're seeds, not full-grown plants. Although there are full-grown things, but luckily we're not able to see them, because in trying to prevent them, we might make it worse. So we change ourselves, not the things.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Yes.
It was one of the opening comments was, is things are hidden for a reason, so that we shouldn't see them. And we were wondering, yes, we want to clear up our nature, but what if, before doing that, we were open to all those hidden memories and they flooded in all at once, everything we've ever done, thought, felt of a good or high nature or a low, what effect would that have?
Well, the philosophy states that one of the reasons why we can't remember our past lives, because the body is new and the brain is new. And we're told that if we were to be able to experience, I mean, man has been in this form for 18 million years. So try and figure out the math. If you know, on an average, we reincarnate every 1,500 years. We have done everything that is possible. I mean, bad and good. And the philosophy would state that at our level of evolution right now, we would not be able to take things and, you know, and really understand what we may have done in previous lives. So it's a protection of sorts that we don't remember. Yes?
I was just thinking that maybe symbols are the most kind of simplistic concept, that is the kind of the basic portal from the noumenal to the phenomenal. And then by putting your attention on symbol, you're kind of activating the potential to come forth through your prism and get to your own unique manifestation from that.
So, are when you say our own symbol, what is?
Well, no,
we don't
the,
don't
they're universal
quite
symbols, but they're like windows or portals into the noumenal, into the world
oh,
of
I see. Okay.
Potentiality, and simply through putting attention on them, you activate that seed or whatever, the pure potentiality, which will manifest itself into something that's completely different depending upon who's putting their attention on it.
Mm-hmm. We, in regards to the symbols, especially when they're coming through as dreams, you know, they are peculiar to us and not to anybody else. And we know that the adepts understand all the symbols that are out there. And we would just ask for more input on that comment then. Yes?
Well, it states that all the accumulated experience of those adepts through generations of investigation into the very heart of nature, all the humans, is recorded on a few pages of geometrical glyphs and symbols. So symbols themselves are memory disks, mm-hmm. if you will. They're storehouses of memory. But they have keys to their understanding, and those keys, as I said, are within ourselves. We have to know how to open them up with our own nature.
So then, in order to access those keys, then we need to, as we were talking about, clean up our nature then and be more directed towards that Bodhi principle so that we can learn those keys to access the symbols. In the back.
In direct relation to the statement that was made, if you take a four-year-old child and have them look at a sky full of the stars, they are going to experience something deep and awesome. But you take an 80-year-old who has been studying the stars, and they're going to experience something mm-hmm. different. But then you take anyone who's had any sort of spiritual insight or epiphany, and the experience they have is different from both of those. So we think the point is well taken. It's a portal. Everything in life is a symbol or mm-hmm. a glyph, and it's up to us how we read it, how we use it.
And we're also warned about dabbling into the astral without the right knowledge, because that portal could be opened up to evil manifestations too. In the back?
Yes, we were thinking also, I think the philosophy sort of explains the idea that human nature in general is selfish. It's always the me or the I. That's just part of human nature. And human nature is just one of the stages that we have to go through.
Yes, on our evolutionary journey, we have to go through many, many stages. And it is said that this period of evolution is very materialistic, but we also have more opportunities and can move quicker in this period of evolution towards a more consistent contact with the higher. You had your hand up.
Yes, I have a question. How would I deal with deja vu could be explained? Because sometimes nothing really happened, but you know that you got an experience and you feel that that already had happened before, but you're experiencing mm-hmm. it now.
Deja vu. Deja vu is, we understand from the philosophy, is that you'll be somewhere and it will trigger. Some people do have little flashes from past lives that come through. And it may just take something that reminds that person to make that flash come. Yes?
We think there's also a mention that it can be, since during the dream stage, we sometimes get a preview of the day to come. So deja vu means already seen. We may have already seen it in our sleep state, and now we're experiencing it on this one.
So there's different reasons for that deja vu experience, and it can be a frightening thing.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's like it could be like a record of something that's, like you mentioned before, that there is a record of something there is to come as well, not just what's happening now. It's like, you know, what's being recorded now.
Well, we think that was just explained too, that the in the sleep state can have a preview of something to come for that day, so it may be that. You had your hand up?
We did.
Did your memory fail?
It had to do with the symbols. And not too long ago, we heard this expression, it was great. And so we think it applies, because so many times symbols can be around us, and we don't even recognize it, because we're not really mindful through the day, which includes listening to people talk. Sometimes they're talking at us, and we're not really listening to what's going on. It's the same thing on whether we're paying attention to life around us. And so the expression was, ask myself, am I seeing with my eyes, or am I seeing through my eyes? And I think there's a difference there.
Yes. Am I seeing with my eyes or through my eyes? Well, it's interesting. The astral body, which is the design body for all life, has real, they have the real senses. And if one, what is the difference between seeing and observing? So with the regular physical senses that we have, many times that it's like you could look at one thing and completely miss something that's off to the side that you're really looking for in the first place. But when we see with the spiritual eyes, the ones that are in the astral body, those are the ones that are the real senses. So we think in that respect, just looking and seeing the what was the frame? We forgot.
You're right. The idea is, am I present? Am I actively looking through my eyes, or is it just coming into my eyeballs and not really?
Yes. So the acting through the eyes would be the astral senses, we would think, to a degree, and then there's different levels of, you know, like we said, everything's sevened. So if we're a very spiritual, like an adept, their vision through the astral eyes is more intense than the little flashes that we get. Yes?
Well, in the quotation you read from that note on memory by HPB, she said that even the most fleeting impression is recorded in the astral light and therefore in the astral body as well. So even if we're not really paying attention in the moment or looking at something,
it's there.
It's still recorded in our nature. It's still seen and recorded in some part of our nature and will come out or be reflected or manifested in the future. So.
Yes, it's amazing that even, you know, somebody walking down the street will still be registered. So, yes.
Well, this seems to allude to something in man, a power in man, that if we focus our attention or our concentration on something, for instance, an idea, we can create something through our imagination. So it's an active pursuit of something. However, we also have that ability to become passive, and just all these things that are being said, we hear them, but we do not place our attention on them. We are just sort of taken up with the activity and not being actively involved in it. So, like watching television or being engrossed in a book where our mind is taken away and we begin to daydream or so forth. So, don't we have to develop in ourselves the ability to concentrate and to focus on something, to create something?
Yes, and we can't think exactly where, but we know Mr. Judge speaks of idle talk. Not only idle talk, but scanning. When one is reading, about not scanning but actually read from, you know, the whole line rather than just skimming. So there is that whole idea, and we know Buddha mentioned it, of, you know, being focused on one thing and, you know, the middle way to just stay and be true. And it is important, especially with meditation and concentration, that we do learn how to stay focused on higher ideals. And the whole idea with reading and going to movies and just and just doing activities that don't take your mind into account, so that you are, so that you can be focused on the good in life and with other people, and instead of idle chatter, maybe find out what's going on with them, how they are. And when you say how are you, really mean how are you, not how are you, oh, I hope they don't tell me anything. And so it is an, being focused and learning how to concentrate is one of the ways that we can, as we've been talking about, make our mind more porous. And the whole idea of the heart doctrine and the mind, I mean, intellectual pursuits are important, learning things is important, but not to the detriment of the heart doctrine. In the way in the back, you had your hand up.
I think it was partially answered, but my question relates to whether or not it's possible for another principle of our nature to be in conjunction with the astrolite rather than always the desire principle. We speak of the astrolite as being so negative, and that is because of the desire principle. So we have these other principles, and we're wondering if it's possible to make a conjunction with the astrolite. Though it's not a principle, it must have higher aspects to it.
Yes, about the higher aspects of the astrolite. There are higher regions of the astrolite, and we know the Akashic is the highest and the most spiritual. So there's different levels as we go up. But with higher mind attached with Bodhi, those are the two principles together that can populate and will populate the astrolite with positive forces then. Yes?
Isn't that where the hidden record of nature is in the Akashic? That if one can read the Akashic records, all the knowledge is there that we need, and that's where the records, that's where the real records are kept. Isn't that correct?
Yes, that's the highest level of the astral. And when we were speaking of keys earlier, at this level of evolution, we don't have those keys to enter into the Akasha.
Somebody must.
Well, the adepts. The adepts, masters. Yeah. Yes?
Even if we could read the Akashic records, would we be able to understand at whatever level we are?
Yes. Yeah, it
may be something, and you can read a book and not understand the word.
Yes,
maybe you can understand words, but you can't make sense of it.
Yeah, it's we're wondering, it would probably be all in symbols and glyphs, but we can't really speak to that. Is this on? Yeah.
On that, those two previous comments, we're thinking of specifically of the example of Edgar Cayce, who, while in his waking state, had a certain experience in life, a certain belief. And yet, he went into a sleeping trance, he had access to records of nature on the healing properties of, different substances, things that had happened, could make predictions on individuals' lives and communities that he didn't know about. It was hidden to him even in his personal life, but he was able to touch that aspect. So it must have been some higher principle in that individual.
Yeah, Edgar Casey is definitely an exceptional case to many things because he didn't charge any money. And the whole thing that he did it, he had to be in a trance in order to do it. We have one quick question. We have time.
Actually, it was from a previous contribution had to do with human nature. We naturally are selfish, we think, and it's hard to feel that way. It's unfortunate in certain ways, but there must be a reason for it. And we remember it corresponds to this period of evolution, which is the fourth round, which corresponds to desire, which is the dominant principle in this great period of evolution. So for us not to be selfish, we actually have to make the effort with our mind to not be so. And if we don't consciously make that effort, we will naturally tend toward personal selfishness.
And we have, human beings have the choice to, and we have will, and we have the choice to change whatever is coming to us. Everything from the past will be coming to us at some point in time. So we have that choice to change that. And just an ending. By evolution or the karmic progress of all creatures, from the half-sentient plant, it is itself transformed by degrees into man, spirit, and God. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.